Hello, I'm Manila Chan. You are tuned in to Modus Operandi. This week, the battle for Africa. Across the continent, a patchwork of political instability steeped in centuries-old French colonial past. Can a modern Africa shake its history and carve its own pathway to prosperity without the West for a better future? We'll delve into the resource-rich continent. All right, let's get into the MO. Africans know their history. The massive continent was carved up by a number of empires through several centuries, from the Moors who ruled the north in the 7th century AD, the Dutch down in the south during the 16th century, and the French over in the west in the 17th century. Africa was always attractive to imperialist nations. And while French imperialism ended by the late 1800s, actual full decolonization was said to be completed by, get this, the 1960s. However, its impacts on the former colonies are still being felt today, whether it's the forced purge of native languages or its entrenched ties on modern-day banking systems, the French footprint is a deep one. Now, a modern Africa is once again seeing the French return, this time a charm offensive by French President Emmanuel Macron. In the summer of 2022, he visited Cameroon, Benin, Guinea-Bissau, Algeria, Nigeria, and then just months before his trip, Macron hosted the so-called New France Africa Summit, where he promised French investments in African businesses to increase influence, in a way, kind of paying penance for its colonial crimes, but at the same time, trying to maintain its foothold in the region from that very colonialism. So what do younger African leaders think about this history and their predictions for the future? For that, we are being joined by Mr. Alhaj Dijetye. He is the president of the Timbuktu Center. It's a premier think tank in Mali focusing on peace-building solutions in the Sahel. Alhaj, thank you for joining us. First, why does it seem like the world only focuses on British colonialism, but seem to forget the French history of colonialism as well? Does it seem like France sort of gets a pass?
Well, first of all, it's really important to let you know that the British colonization was an indirect rule, and then the French colonization was a direct rule, whereby French colonizer came, imposed their language, imposed the way they colonized African countries. In contrary to the British colonization, they came to Africa, learn about the history, the cultural background, and colonized African. But in general, colonization, it's colonization. There is no good in colonization. Over.
So which countries in Africa saw the French colonize, and what impacts do we still see from that today? Can you sort of expand on what that French influence looks like right now?
The influence is all about governance level. As you see what's going on in my country, in Mali, actually, there is a growing anti-French sentiment in the population, because since 2012, there was a conflict in the northern region of Mali. And then for the French forces by Operation Barkhane liberates the northern region of Mali. After 10 years of operation, they were there for fighting against terrorism, but the local grassroots populations, Malian in general, feel like French was coming again as a colonizer due to their behavior. Due to the interference in domestic politics in Mali.
Now, just to follow up, so we're clear, in Mali, was the fear of French interference, was that justified?
Yeah, because they talk about sovereignty of the state of Mali, and also, as you know, the French forces implication in northern Mali was not a result. So it was a failure. And a lot of people really point out friends that he was not supporting Mali.
Talk to us a bit about what's called colonial debt. How does that relate to the infrastructure problems experienced by some of these African countries now?
In West Africa, regions, countries that are colonized by French, there is still that French debt you talk about because, yes, today we are not in colonization area, but we know that there is a lot of French enterprises in Mali, in Niger, in Burkina Faso, and then in Ivory Coast. And those economic dynamics show how influential they are in Africa. And some even talk about, you know, the exploitation of natural resources in West Africa. If we talk about energy, we know that France have ties in Niger with Areva.
In recent years, let's call them the Macron era, there has been renewed interest by the French in various African states, specifically Nigeria. Emmanuel Macron seems to be doing a lot of courting of Nigeria on something of a charm offensive. Why?
Yeah, as you know, that French is actually losing influence in the ex-colonies like Mali, Niger, Burkina Faso, where there is a growing new generation against the French influence in their countries. And now is the way for them to diversify their partners and then find new partners. And that's why I feel like they are trying to build ties with Nigeria.
Does it have anything to do with Nigeria's natural resources?
As we all know that Nigeria is a giant in Africa and they have oil. There is a huge potential of oil, petrol, and I feel like one of interest can be oil in Nigeria.
All right, Elhadj Dijetiye is staying with us. Now, coming up next, we will delve into the finances of some African states under the control of France. Is this financial guardianship needed? We'll discuss it when we return. Sit tight. The MO will be right back.
We need to counter the Russian state-controlled narrative.
Als Teil der Sanktionen gegen Russland gehen die westlichen Länder gegen russische Auslandssender vor.
Mais écoutez, monsieur, c'est pas à vous de décider de qui est journaliste ou pas dans ce pays. On est en France, quoi, c'est pas possible.
We will ban in the European Union the Kremlin's media machine. The state-owned Russia Today and Sputnik.
RT, Sputnik, even our video agency, roughly all banned on YouTube.
Et merci à vous tous pour votre fidélité et votre soutien.
What happens when you mix digital games with actual physical sports?
Something like digital?
The answer is yes.
Kazan is preparing to host the first ever Games of the Future, a cyber contest with a physical dimension. One of the innovators, Igor Stolyarov, is on the verge of redefining sports and gaming. He tells us what's behind this synergy and if it's the future.
Unit 731 was a unique organization in the history of the world. What they were trying to do was to simply do nothing short than build the most powerful and most deadly biological weapons program that the world had ever known.
それを各班にな作らして、それで再人生をしとったわけよ。取れたでな、その一回金を作るのに3人ぐらい殺しよったんや。
一般の丸太、木の丸太ですね、人間とも思わなかったんではないかと思いますよ。
赤ちゃんのな入った女の人を解剖してな、赤ちゃんを標本に入れるんや。お母さんも殺してな。
14歳の子供ですからね、まだやっぱり病気にかかった人、怪我をした人、こういった人の治療をやったりすると思ってたんです。ところがしまいにはね、細菌戦の専門技術員だろうというようなことが出てきましたけれども、
Welcome back to the MO. I'm Manila Chan. Though French decolonization was completed in the mid-1900s, several nations in Africa seem to still have their finances inextricably tied to France. Predatory loans and financial mechanisms continue to prey upon African nations, subjecting them to onerous debt repayment schemes, forcing them to privatize key social programs and economic sectors like healthcare and agriculture, and draining the content of its vast resources in minerals and people. It's often referred to as debt trap diplomacy. A recent report shows that while $30 billion reaches Africa in Western aid per year, about six times that amount leaves the continent. But the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, and the World Bank have been accused of being at the forefront of debt trap diplomacy. Both institutions famously called to account for their lending practices to third world nations by John Perkins, author of the now infamous book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman. Take Ghana for an example. Recently, in the Western African nation, the government had a policy of giving subsidies to rice farmers in the north of the country to develop their industry. But when the IMF and the World Bank gave Ghana much needed loans, one of the stipulations was that it would cut those subsidies, using the money instead to finance the loans, and in turn forcing Ghana now to buy rice using the loans from the IMF and World Bank partner countries like the United States at a higher price. The result was the economic impoverishment of the north of Ghana and waves of migration to cities in the south. In sub-Saharan Africa, governments average around 5 to 16% interest rates on government bonds compared to near zero rates in the U.S. and Europe. Such high yield rates punish poor African nations by devouring a large portion of the government's discretionary income, which is already low given that African countries find it incredibly difficult to tax most or even the majority of their populations. The result is indeed properly called a trap. It's a cycle meant to keep African nations in permanent economic bondage to their creditors in the first world. But Africa does have some prospects. High fertility rates on the continent mean that there will be plenty of young people to drive growing and developing economies in the future. And Africa's increasing political independence will allow for increased international cooperation with countries like Russia, China, and Brazil. Now, El Hadj Djetie of the Timbuktu Center is staying with us. So, El Hadj, let's talk a little bit about monetary policy in the former Franco-Africa. I've seen reports that something like 80% of African foreign reserves of these countries are deposited in so-called operations accounts, which are controlled by the French Treasury. Now, by some estimates, collectively, around half a trillion U.S. dollars are held by French banks, and that there are caps on the amount of money the African states are actually allowed to access. Official reporting on that is really spotty at best. But there are allegations that if those African states needed more than the allotted 15% of their accounts, then those French banks can charge interest on their own capital. Have you ever heard of anything like this? Are these reports accurate?
Yeah, there is a lot of reports about the money and Francefa. When we talk about West Africa, most of those ex-French colonies use what we call Francefa. So this currency is very, very low. And for me, a country cannot be developed if it depends to its ex-colonizers' money. African countries, West African countries colonized by the French need to have their own currency, need to have their own money, and need to set their own, you know, their own amount in international global trade market.
Now, following up on that, what do the locals in the Sahel region say about the French controlling these foreign reserves?
In the Sahel region of West Africa, there is a growing anti-French sentiment about the use of Francefa, and a lot of civil society organizations are really working in the way to raise awareness for government to stop collaborating in terms of using the Francefa currency and then use their own currency. As Nigeria, they use Naira, in Mali, in Burkina Faso, in Niger, in Senegal, even in Togo, there is a lot of, you know, Pan-Africanists advocating for change for those African countries to use their own currency.
So is the African Union considering really creating their own joint currency?
They considering that there is a lot of research going on and there is a lot of talks going on. But until now, we can say that there is a final decision of a decision about using their own currency.
Now, the West often likes to accuse African countries of being corrupt. Does this obfuscate perhaps the bigger picture of the role the collective West has played in Africa?
Well, it's really important to know that corruption is everywhere you go in the world. And as you know, most of people in the world gain profit by corrupting a government system, an institution system, or grassroots communities, money. So everywhere you can go, there is corruption. It's not only in Africa.
So you feel the West paints an unfair picture of Africa then?
Well, they can paint Africa when it's come to corruption, but the corruption, which is Africa, is really easy to identify because, you know, most of those African countries are very, very poor, landlocked, arid, and very, very poor. So they are not developed countries. So there is a lot of bribery. There is a lot of bribery and corruption in government. And also, this not to say that there is no bribery in the US, in Europe, or in England, or everywhere. There is corruption everywhere. But in Africa, what is really sad is that populations sometimes don't even have infrastructure. So population don't even have basic social services. It is different in the US when you travel, you have metros. In Europe, you have metros. Your population have access to basic services like good hospital, like good school, like good health, social care. This is not the same like in Africa.
Is France losing its ability to sort of project power onto Africa, or are these African governments learning some lessons from the past and figuring out how to kind of get the French off their back?
In international relations, there is no friendship among the states. There is just an interest. So it's really clear that they have an interest in Africa, and that interest they used to have with the older generation of those French colonized African countries is not the same today, because there is the growing of a new generation which are really educated, who really understand international relations, which really understand international trade and which really demand change in terms of cooperation, change in terms of a win-to-win a collaboration between the ex-colony and their countries. And that growing generation is really advocating for change. It's the anti-French sentiment is not against the French populations like the French, but it's against the French policies, politics towards Africa.
So now that the French influence has sort of worn off, do you think the U.S. is going to step in to fill that void?
Yeah, other countries like U.S. can grow influence. Actually, the demand of the Sahelian state, the Sahelian new generation, the elites, grassroots population, is nothing that a win-to-win collaboration with any partner. Any country with interest about Africa, French-speaking countries must understand that, you know, the narrative change. They must change paradigm. And then the collaboration must be a win-to-win collaboration. And that's not just a collaboration that benefits from one country to the destroyment of another country.
What are your final thoughts on the matter of Africa and the various states on the continent in the way of their desire to move forward in the 21st century towards sovereignty, more prosperity? What do people need to know about the region?
Just to say never again, colonization was one of the worst things that can ever happen in history of mankind. And today we are not in the era of colonization. We are in the era of geopolitical, geostrategic implication and influence. Partners must take into account the growing new generation of Africa, West Africa, because the demography in West Africa is so high. And this new generation is ready to work with any partner or a win-to-win partnership. This generation is not ready to obey. This generation is educated, can imagine, and then can put their countries into the global stage.
El Hadj Dujetier, thank you so much for this conversation. So as we can see, sometimes when we say goodbye, it doesn't always mean forever. Or in the case of France, au revoir really means bientôt, or see you later. That's going to do it for this week's episode of Modus Operandi, the show that digs deep into foreign policy. I'm your host, Manila Chan. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you again next week to figure out the MO.